We think women need to talk more openly about money because money really matters. It shouldn't be embarrassing or confusing. Join the conversation. We'll be discussing a whole range of topics which will help you get comfortable with your finances. Money Matters, brought to you by AJ Bell. Hello, welcome to a special episode of the AJ Bell Money Matters podcast, which has been timed to celebrate International Women's Day. I'm Danny Hewson, and I'm joined by Laura Souter. Hi, Laura.
Hi, Danny. Hi, everyone. Hopefully many of you are regular listeners to the podcast, but if this is your first, then welcome. We always like to put out an episode that marks International Women's Day, but for us, the campaign to help women feel more confident with their money, to help narrow that gender pensions gap, gender pay gap, and deal with financial inequality in all its forms, that's just business as usual for us. It's not about a single day, but it's still nice to celebrate International Women's Day.
It is. And it's always brilliant to speak on this podcast, as we do regularly, to some incredible women and to really highlight some of the issues. And this year for International Women's Day, the theme is Inspire Inclusion. And there is a particular community that's been really pushing hard over the past couple of years to become more visible, and that is women in midlife. And I think something which I spotted the other day is that in New York Fashion Week, there is an entire fashion show where the designer is only having models who are in midlife. Things are changing so much, because I remember talking to my mum when she turned 50, and she said, well, kind of the world now expects me to be a little old lady. You know, you get to sort of pension age, so 60, 60 plus, and the way that people view women used to be, you're not really sort of a viable, vital, valuable member of society anymore. But that has totally been turned on its head. And I, for one, in my 50s now, just feel that it's great that life isn't just coming to an end. And actually, you know, it is really just the halfway point.
Yeah, I definitely think the attitudes towards that have changed. I mean, there's still, I'm sure you would agree, still some way to go, but I think it's so vastly different to what it was for the previous generations. And there are so many podcasts and communities that have sprung up to help women take control of this chapter of their lives, which is a really key, you know, pivotal chapter. And one of those communities is called Noon.
It's created by the former editor of the Sunday Times magazine, Eleanor Mills. She's had her own battle to find purpose in her 50s, and she's found plenty of like-minded women. Gen Xers who've worked all their lives, have quite a bit of disposable cash, and are far from ready to go quietly. She calls herself and her compatriots Queenagers, and she doesn't pull any punches about how society needs to keep changing to keep up. Noon is a really positive movement. It's been a really positive labour of love for you, but it was born out of what was a really difficult experience for you, because you were made redundant in your 50s. What happened?
Yeah, I was actually 49 when the unfortunate occurrence occurred, as it were. And it was one of those things that came out of a really kind of blue sky. And I think that for many of us who've always defined ourselves by our careers or by our jobs, I've been at the newspaper for 23 years, and I've been the magazine editor and the editorial director, and you survive so many various rounds of those kind of things that you kind of feel like it's never going to happen to you. But of course, a bit like political careers, all media careers really end in some kind of failure. And usually you get a changing of the guard, and then the senior lieutenants are out. So that was really what happened to me. And that was a massive blow. I wrote about it recently, and I was saying that I felt like I'd died. I'd kind of read so many emails, which was like kind of reading my obituary kind of over and over and over again, how I'd help people, what I'd done, that it was like a whole kind of chunk of me had died, which was very painful. But then what I discovered the hard way, because there wasn't really anything out there at that point, it's partly why I've set up the community that I have, was that there wasn't really anything out on the internet trying to tell you how you move on in midlife into a next chapter, how you take those next steps. And I'd been a columnist for 10, 15 years. And so I kind of knew that things that were happening to me tended to be happening to other people. And I think that that experience gave me the confidence to think, well, if I've just been made redundant at 49, and I've always thought I was quite a successful person, then there's probably quite a lot of other people out there who have been as well. And there was such a taboo about talking about it. So I wrote an article for The Telegraph about how painful it felt being made redundant, how, you know, that it was awful. And that because of looking around and not finding anything that was particularly helpful in terms of finding those next steps, I'd set up my own community, which is called noon.org.uk, which is a platform for women in midlife. I call them queenagers. And that's all about how you pivot in midlife, how you move from something that you have been doing into your new thing, and what the granularity of that transformation process looks like. Because I remember when I googled redundancy and moving on from redundancy, all I could find was the HMRC website, which, let me tell you, was not the kind of encouraging kind of storytelling content that I hoped to find. It was really depressing. And then I remember kind of googling around and finding a few things from America about, you know, like 10 things to do if you've been made redundant, and none of them was the kind of content that I wanted. And so with my journalist brain, I thought, oh, there's an opportunity here. There is a gap in the market. There's lots of people like me in this situation, and there's hardly any resources out there. So I set up Noon, which is a website which helps you into a new chapter at midlife, and which supports women through the pinch points of those times and into the sunny uplands. And we did a huge piece of research with a massive management consulting firm, really looking at the issues affecting women at this point. And so this has become my new career. I mean, who knew?
So you went from being included to excluded, and then you found a way to make everyone within your community feel included, part of that community, because that's what International Women's Day is all about this year. It's about fostering inclusion. And for the longest time, I think women in midlife did feel that they were excluded. Is that changing?
It's starting to, or it's certainly something that I'm starting to try and shift with some other partners, you know, like your good selves at AJ Bell, who are really seeing this cohort of women. I think that the gendered ageism in our society, which is rife, which is for people who don't know that term, that's where sexism meets ageism. And so women get hit with a real kind of double whammy, usually in our late 40s, is something that we don't really talk about in the way that we might say talk about racism or people who are excluded because of sexuality. But for me, International Women's Day is all about inclusion, and the bit of inclusion which is usually overlooked is stuff around age. And then you get the intersectionality of where age hits gender, and that is really intense for women, partly because and this is something that I've been talking about and campaigning on for a very long time, because I was chair of Women in Journalism. So I was really interested in the lens with which the media and our culture shows us ourselves. So if you think that the media should be a kind of mirror, we're giving you a direct reflection, actually it isn't. It's a distorting lens, because all too often its coverage is filtered through the view of a particular load of old, white, posh blokes, basically. And, you know, not to say that, you know, I'm a pretty old, white, posh woman, but I'm not kind of part of that kind of very like the group who really made the decisions, essentially. And that meant that you were always being taught to see yourself through a very male lens. And I think that what that means for women in the culture is that we find ourselves being kind of judged or excluded, because we live in a culture which values youth, particularly, and, you know, particular kind of youth and beauty in women over our other qualities. So what I've been really trying to do at Noon is to change that conversation and to put the focus really back on how much women at this point are capable of, all our huge experience, our wisdom, and also our enormous power as consumers. So what I discovered when I really started digging into women in midlife, queenagers, is that we're behind over 90% of all household consumer spending decisions, which sounds kind of unlikely. But then if you think about it, you know, I buy stuff for me, for my husband, for my parents, and for my children. And so we have that incredible decision-making power across three generations. And of course, we're a pioneering generation of women within the workforce. There have never been women who've worked so long or as we have. And so we're also sitting on considerable amounts of our own wealth. And in a way, we're the first generation to have that, because we're the first generation who've worked all the way through in the same kinds of numbers as men. So actually, I think Queenager is a really interesting, pioneering, new kind of woman, and companies don't really know what to do with us. Society doesn't really know what to do with us. And a lot of brands and organizations haven't caught up with where we are as Queenagers. There's still a sense that when you hit 50, you become a fuddy-duddy little old lady. And of course, we know that that's not true. So it's kind of trying to shift those cultural tropes, if you like, as well as, and I think we do that by telling stories. I've been telling stories all my career. And I really believe that we can tell a different story about what women at this point and later are for. And by doing that, we shift the narrative and extend the runway for all women.
So Queenager, where did that come from? Where did the term come from?
So Queenager, I get asked that a lot. So you have to remember, I've been writing headlines for 25 years. So of course, you're always trying to come up with something a bit more catchy, and midlife women feels a bit clunky to me. And Queenager, it came really from one of the ladies in the research who said to me, I feel like a teenager, but in my own house with nice sheets and posh tea. So that really kind of clung in my head as this kind of teenage, and also it's this bit of a hormonal shift as well. So, and then I spend a lot of time in Jamaica, where they talk about women as queens, which of course relates to all those kind of African queens in kind of history and the kind of forgotten, these kind of forgotten icons. But it's also how they refer often to kind of older women. So for me, my headline writing brain, queens, teenagers, queenagers, it kind of, I suddenly thought, oh, that's a bit more fun.
So Queenagers, you were saying, are responsible for a huge amount of household consumption. Yeah. Does that mean that they feel confident in terms of their finances, or are there still huge gaps?
Well, as you know, Danny, there's huge gaps. I mean, it's interesting because Queenagers have been dubbed by Saga, who do a lot of research in this area. So they've been dubbed the chief consumption officers because we're behind so much consumer power. So they've been dubbed the chief consumption officers. But I think when it comes to us individually, we're less confident. I think we're quite confident about, you know, say, buying a new phone or, you know, spending money on my children's accommodation for university, or, you know, those kind of purchases, I think we're quite confident about. I think when it comes to money, you know, things like self-invested pensions, or, you know, what we're going to do with our pensions, or do you have a life insurance policy, or are you paying down your mortgage? I think those bigger financial questions, I find the women are less confident around. And I think that that's partly also about being this transitional generation where we have one foot in the kind of world of our mothers who were brought up in the kind of 1950s, that whole thing about, you know, a man is definitely not a financial plan, but we were brought up kind of with the residue of that. I certainly see that for my mother's generation, they really define themselves by the kind of man that they were with. And they really expected that if they were successful, then a man would look after them and they wouldn't have to make any of these decisions themselves. So I think that there's a bit of a hangover of that in the kind of way that the Queenagers think about money, and has been a kind of reluctance to really dig in and think about it for themselves. And so I see within my community a real kind of mixture. And it's quite interesting. You often find women, you know, even women who work in the city or who work in finance, are not very good at their own money or making the right decisions about that. I've got a friend who is actually big, you know, works for a big fund, and she was emailing me going, "Oh, do you have a financial advisor? What should I do about my pensions?" And I was thinking, well, why are you asking me? I'm a journalist. You're the one who works for financial services. But I think that there's a real mismatch even amongst women who have been quite professionally successful about what they do with their own money, and what we see, what I know I've certainly felt myself, and what I see in other women in my community is that kind of dread mixture of kind of boredom and terror that kind of afflicts one, you know, when you have to start tackling your tax return or dealing with your pension or kind of, you know, working out, you know, those kind of things. I think where we kind of get gripped by a kind of terror and an inertia that there's always something that feels, you know, more important or nicer to do. But what I've found personally is actually getting a grip on that stuff, you know, going to talk to somebody who knows about it, or actually beginning to inform yourself, reading the dreaded money pages of the newspaper, or listening to something like your Money Matters podcast, or, you know, actually it's not rocket science. And if you apply, you know, if we apply our considerable brains to the matter in hand, we kind of can do it. But I do see that there's a kind of block for many of the women kind of around starting.
Why do you think money is still an issue that many women, many queen agers, feel that they're reluctant to tackle head on?
I think they're quite fearful. I think that there hasn't been a culture around women having agency around money. This is very new. I was talking to my mum about this. She's 80. She's always earned. But she was saying that when she divorced my dad in the 70s, she couldn't get a mortgage in her own name. It had to be secured for her by her father. You know, that's really not very long ago. That's within living memory. So I think that we shouldn't berate ourselves too much as women for finding this stuff hard or not feeling that it comes that easily, because culturally it hasn't really been something that we've been expected to or even allowed to be a part of. I mean, I've always been the main breadwinner in my family. Like about half of the women actually aged 45 to 65 are the sole earners. But again, that's really new. That's a kind of pioneering thing. My husband stayed at home and looked after the kids for a lot of the time, or if he worked, he kind of worked around them. And that was definitely not something that was particularly accepted when he was doing that. So I think all of these mores and expectations about money have shifted hugely, even in the last kind of 10 or 15 years. And I think that the women coming up behind us, and you see that with the proliferation of kind of money podcasts and, you know, Slay in Your Lane and all that kind of stuff about taking charge of your financial future, that's beginning to trickle through. But I think for my queen agers, they're much more of a transitional generation on all of this, which is why we've really been trying to kind of help them with the campaign that we've been doing with you about really being specific about what they can do. And Helena Morrissey, who used to be your chair, he's an old friend of mine, she told me years ago that financial health, a bit like doing your Pilates or doing your daily exercise, was about doing things little and often. And I think that that's really true. And it's a kind of habit that we need to get into, to check our bank account, make sure that we are getting interest on our account, looking at, say, things that the government are bringing up, like lifetime ISAs, which might be good for kind of, you know, funding our children in the future. Just being much more canny about those kinds of things, and also realizing that we can, with a little bit of effort or a bit of self-education or listening to your kind of Money Matters podcast, we can really make a difference to what our old age is going to look like. And the figures on the pension gap for women are absolutely terrifying. Women have about 67,000, men have double that by the time that they retire. So I think it's really, really important that, particularly as women live longer, that we take kind of control over what that financial future is going to look like. Because yes, we want to go on living, you know, healthily. I'm all really into health span. The increasing lifespan is fantastic, but not if you don't have enough money to live. So I think as midlife women, queen agers, it should be at the top of all of our agendas to make sure that the money that we have got is going to work hard for us, and also really think about what we can do to maximize that.
Yeah, it's really interesting, because the women that you're talking about, the women who are part of your community, they work, they've been to university, they've got money in their own right. Many of them have decided not to have kids, so they've got an awful lot of income, and they feel that they're not seen, and they've got big questions about what they do with all of that money, with the legacy that they can potentially leave behind. And, you know, we talk an awful lot about ESG, about environmental, social, governments, doing good things with your money. And that is something that they're desperately looking for.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And again, it's part of the kind of male lens that we train on our society. So if actually, when you look and really dig into the statistics, nearly a third of women aged 45 to 65 in the UK do not have children. Nearly a third. That's a huge number. And yet they're always made to feel like they are kind of aberrant or, you know, unusual because they're child free. And so what I've really learned within the Noon community is you can never assume when you speak to someone that they're a mother or that they're not a mother. But and in some ways, the more successful women are, the less likely they are still to have children. So we, in our big piece of research that we did, I was speaking to one woman who is the partner in a London law firm. And she said to me that she said, I'm 51, I'm earning all this money, I've got this great job. But when it comes to the wider culture, I just feel like I don't exist. I just don't see anyone like me kind of to being talked about in adverts or in the media. And she said, it's completely nuts for brands because she described herself as disposable income-a-rama. And actually, that's really true. She's got far more disposable income. You know, she's the one who's shopping at Waitrose and buying blueberries and, you know, nice things for herself because she doesn't have any of the dependents that, you know, many of the rest of us have. But what's interesting about that, it's not just that they've got more disposable income, but they are thinking about it in a very different way. So this whole business of legacy is incredibly important to them. And what we see with our queenagers is what we call my head of consulting at Noon is a woman called Lucy Ryan, who's written a brilliant book called Revolting Women. And she talks about the midlife revolt, which is about a kind of real shift at this point into purposefulness, doing something with meaning. Partly because there's a bit of a sense that, you know, the clock is ticking. So if you're not going to, if you haven't done that thing that you always wanted to do, if you don't do it now, it's going to be too late. But also what comes with that, I think particularly for the women who are child free, is a sense of wanting to pay it forward, you know, wanting to leave some kind of legacy, whether that's setting up some kind of a charity, or I've got a great friend who's setting up a big mentoring scheme for young leaders of the future, because there's a kind of sense of wanting to leave a kind of creative legacy and a sense that your being here has mattered and kind of lives on in some way. And we see that as a really, really strong influence on many of these child-free queenagers. And yet again, I don't think that many financial institutions are thinking about them at all. And actually their financial needs are rather different from women who are mums, because you know, much of my financial planning will be, well, my kids will get it all anyway. So that's rather different if you're leaving your money kind of to an organisation, or you're thinking about setting it up kind of as a trust for the long term. So I think that lots of banks and things are really missing a trick by not really having a proposition for the child-free queenager, something that we've been talking about a lot. And when we did write about this, we got such a huge reaction because these women feel so unseen and so invisible. And that's true of women in midlife, you know, period, I would say. I mean, over half the women that we surveyed said that they felt kind of, you know, either ignored or invisible, which is a lot if you consider also how much kind of wealth they're commanding and how important they are in within society. And so I think the first thing that we found with Noon is having this conversation, saying to women at this point, oh, we're really interested in what you've got to say, it almost floors them at the start. You know, if you then come in like I did, you're rather optimistic about everything that's possible. And I talk about my book, which is coming out later this year, is called Much More to Come, because I really feel that in the 100-year life, 50 is only halfway through. It's why I called my organisation Noon, as in the middle of the day. So I think there's a lot to be optimistic about. And there's also a huge potential for brands, and particularly for financial institutions, who very obviously are seeing these women, making them feel seen, making them feel like they have important needs which are being met. Because I think in so many of our institutions, that's not the case. If we look at advertising, although, you know, these women are behind, say, 90% of all household consumer spending decisions, they appear in less than 12% of adverts. So that just seems to me a bad business, and also like massively kind of wrong and unfair. And it also what I'm doing about Queen Ages, I think, is not just for women in midlife, it's for all women, because by doing this, we extend the runway for everybody else. So we say, you're not done and finished when you're 50. Actually, this is when you become a queen ager. You come into your prime. This is when it gets really good. That's certainly what I feel. And saying to younger women, look, you've got this to look forward to, rather than you drop off a cliff and become invisible when you're 50. That makes a huge difference to how they feel about themselves. And I do a lot of public speaking now, and I get so many younger women coming up to me going, oh, wow, you made me feel so much better. You know, I'm really kind of in a tough squeeze point of small children, big job, everything feels like really hectic. The idea that actually at 50, it starts getting good is really kind of inspirational in terms of having something to look forward to.
So that was Eleanor Mills from Noon. You can find Noon on all of the usual social media platforms. Find them on Instagram under Up on Noon. And through this special episode, did you manage to get a financial confession out of Eleanor, Danny?
I did. It is one that many queen agers are likely to have to face at some point.
It is time for your financial confession or dilemma.
Oh, my ongoing financial question dilemma is, do I sell the family home? You know, a friend of mine said to me, you can only sell the family home once. But like many of us, most of my money is in my house. And I now have quite a big house, and both my children are away at university. So my husband and I kind of rattle around. We've actually got a lodger at the moment. But the thing that we argue about over and over again is, you know, do we sell out? Do we go and live somewhere cheaper? Do we like move out of London? We both love the sea and being in Devon. So our really big financial dilemma is, do we keep all our eggs in one basket, which is having this house, or do we kind of diversify and, you know, realise some of that kind of for the future? But the children, of course, are massively anti the idea of us selling our house and moving out of London. And I'm a real Londoner born and bred. My mum lived in Soho and I kind of grew up in Camden. So for me, there's a big wrench about actually shifting. I love the countryside, but I never feel happier than when I'm driving back in along the Westway and I smell the city air of London and I feel like I'm home.
See, I'm the complete opposite. I live in the country, and for me, the city is a great place to visit, but I drive down the hill and I can see the green fields in front of me and I just think, peace.
Yeah, and you feel relaxed. Whereas for me, wherever I've been, I drive back in along the Westway and my heart quickens and I go, hooray, home, you know, London. There's nothing I love more than the kind of petrichord smell of rain on kind of hot pavement, all that kind of thing. So I think I am just a Londoner at heart.
I think this debate is so interesting because I think so many people assume that they will just automatically downsize once they reach a certain point in their life, once they don't need such a large home. But I think then when they're faced with the prospect of downsizing and putting all of their stuff into a smaller property and maybe the realities of moving to a smaller place, it's maybe not quite so appealing, leave alone the whole dilemma of where to move to or whether you want to be a city girl or a country girl.
Yeah, absolutely. Thinking about just, you know, your friends, your life, and also having space if you've got kids like Eleanor does, like I do, when they've come back from university, to be able to, you know, turn up for Christmases or whatever. And then hopefully in the future, if they have kids, to have the space to be able to have everyone together. Although, of course, that means that you are not benefiting from downsizing. Look, thanks so much for listening to this International Women's Day special. We hope that whatever you did, you celebrated it with other incredible women in your lives.
And our next episode will be out in a couple of weeks' time. And we've drafted in the brilliant financial advisor, Jane Gow, from Clear Cut Financial Planning, to answer all of your questions. So do send them in. Email us at hello@ajbellmoneymatters.co.uk. Or you can message us on social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, X, all of those. And we just want all of your financial questions. Maybe the questions that you feel a bit too silly asking your friends, or the burning financial issues that you've got that you just really want a bit of expert help and advice. Anything from kind of saving, investing, pensions, the whole area, and we will do our best to answer all of them.
And don't forget to sign up to our newsletter via our website, ajbellmoneymatters.co.uk, so we can keep you up to date with everything that we're doing. You can find all of our podcasts, articles, special events, and you'll also find the link to sign up to our newsletter there, because with that, you will be able to get a discount code for an event that we're holding in Manchester in April. So do take a look at that. Until next time, thank you so much for keeping us company, and remember to let all of those other incredible women in your life know all about us at AJ Bell Money Matters.
Before you go, please remember this podcast is for educational purposes, and the views expressed don't necessarily reflect those of AJ Bell. The podcast isn't telling you if a certain investment is suitable or not. Don't forget that the value of investments can change, and you can lose money as well as make it. It's also important to remember that how you're taxed will depend on your individual circumstances, and rules can change. The way an investment performed in the past may not be the same as how it behaves in the future. If you want help, go see a qualified financial advisor.